This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Rain, Carolyn,
Miguel,
Jack,
Julia,
Jeanette. Welcome, everyone. Happy New Year. We're almost 5% into the new year. Today, I'm going to talk a little bit about time. From the Shobo Genzo, from time being time, Dogen's translation goes like this. Thus the self setting itself out in array sees itself. This is the understanding that is self being time, selfless time. So setting itself out in array. When we consider our space and time, array can mean to set or place in order, the setting itself out in array, or to dress or decorate in splendid attire is also array. We can be very imaginative. A group or a kind that has a definite modal joint point forming a center of variation. That is what we do, is we are the center of that variation that we set out in array. He goes on and says, in essence, all things in the entire world are linked with one another as moments, because all moments are the time being. They are your time being. So the present moment is right before us. We engage in yesterday's memories. We engage with tomorrow's dreams and concerns. We chase after the past and long for the future. And sometimes we long for the past and chase after or resist the future. And the longing, the chasing, the resisting happening in our moments of this mind-body. And moment after moment, the present is again right before us. Life itself is found and experienced in this present moment with the 84,000 instances that are in this moment and the inconceivable number of connections and threads that flow before us and through us. The threads, the connections, the relationships that flow before us and through us, this eternal moment, this flowing eternal moment. In this experience of the moment, we often stop to look at and taste and consider and think about these connections of existence. And this can begin the dependent arising, often called the 12 factors or links of interdependent origination, the ignorance, intention, consciousness, the six sense consciousnesses, the material mental elements of the six sense objects, contact made with the six sense organs, the quality and feeling, the tone of this connection, pleasant, neutral, or unpleasant. the thirst that arises from this contact and the fixity of views and of self that we bring to this moment, the forces of becoming that arise, that cause action. We take action of one sort or another, and that then results in birth, decay, and death in our, of our existence, of what we do, what we create, what we witness. The vastness of these moving streams of existence, the interconnectedness of all things and the involved arisings are naturally prone to cause us to wonder how to make it all work. And at times it can often be overwhelming. And we become fixated on particular parts of it, and this can cause discomfort. The Buddha has helped us. He and his and all the ancestors have helped us to make sense of this flow of existence. The Buddha, when he talked with Mahakasyapa at one point, they were talking about this existence, and he said, when this is, that is. When this arises, that arises. When this no longer is, that no longer is. Any one thing depends on all other things for its existence. Understanding is fundamental in this practice and in our existence. And there are many kinds of understanding. There's physical understanding. We understand how gravity is affecting us, how our momentum is going. There's emotional understanding. Some are quite astute in this understanding, and some of us aren't quite so astute. There's intellectual understandings, and the understandings can be shallow or middle or deep. And it is these deeper experiences of understanding that open us, awaken us. It enlivens us and gives us insights, and sometimes even enlightens us. Recently, I was upset at how some people I love and care for were navigating situations that included me. I made observations that resulted in judgments that in the moment really lacked deeper understandings of the surrounding conditions showing up in that moment. I was stuck on plateaus and vistas that seemed to show what is. I was sure of that, yet I was blind to the deeper underpinnings of the realities. My little stool or stepladder provided a view over the hedge, yet with the flood of thirst for particular outcomes was absent seeing the bigger picture, the bigger movements and conditions. Though all of these bigger movements and conditions are ever present when we understand, these moments are overwhelming and uncomfortable and led to distress and suffering for the others and for myself. So I'd like to take a breath here and take another breath. And just focus on this one activity and examine it. How does watching breath help to unbind? What goes into watching and what is in control? With the observer, our awareness and my breath. Is the breath in control? The watcher? The awareness? The awareness of the breath? The awareness of the watcher watching? Is there control or is there just watching? And how attuned is my watching? Before we watch anything, the universe before us has myriad possibilities. And once we observe, then the possibilities are transformed into noticing whether a breath is in or out. Before we notice, it is either in or out, and that's called superposition. The two possibilities are said to lay or place over each other before they are noticed, and they are not in contact. Superposition means to place two or several likely outcomes over each other as possibilities. Before we're aware, there are lots of possibilities. And once we become aware, the possibilities collapse into what we see and notice and measure. Recently, I was fortunate to receive a book from a good friend called The Grand Biocentric Design by Robert Lanza that postulates that the universe didn't evolve consciousness, but rather that consciousness is what makes the universe. The behavior of some subatomic particles, indeed all particles and objects, is inextricably linked to the observer. And absent a conscious observer, all particles are best in an undetermined state of probability waves. Space and time do not have a real existence outside of our animal sense. Space-time is the process by which we perceive changes in the universe. And the mind is unified with matter and the world through the modulation of the internal ion dynamic of the brain at a quantum level that allows parts of the information system, which is our consciousness, to simultaneously be interconnected. Space, time, it's like being time or time being. Lanza cites an experiment called the Leavitt experiment, which was initiated over 40 years ago. And it's a simple one that has three components: a choice, a way to measure the brain activity during the decision process, and a clock. Our neurons move at a rate of about 70 to 250 miles per hour through our body. And with these electrodes on the brain, the frontal lobe and over the top, they were able to measure the rate at which a decision was made. And the decision was a simple one. It was to raise the left arm or the right arm, and to do it just not to pre-think about it, but just to, at some point, make a decision and do it. So they measured the brain activity through these electrodes on the scalp. They were able to separately detect the urge and then the action motion of the right or left arm. They also had a clock, you know, where the subject was able to, at the moment they made the decision, they indicated when they made the decision to move. And what was noticed was that actually a fraction of a second before they made that decision, there was already a change in the brain's electric signals. What's considered the most amazing result was that the participant's decision was discovered by the experimenters before the experimenters made that decision, because already in the brain, the decision had been made. The subject's decision came after there was an electric change in the brain and before the movement of their arm. So the experimenters were able to know before the participants which arm or finger they would move. So these results seem to show that the decisions made in the brain's neural circuitry came before the subject was even conscious of them. So let's take another moment to breathe and we are asked to let our breath naturally move in and out. And our breath, we can watch it move naturally. And are we following our breath that is given to us again and again? And if we follow it, do we also follow the will given us? So I'm wondering if perhaps premonitions, dreams, these events we have provide clues to us that, and even the mentioning or suggestions from others, even passers-by, might be guideposts, messages, carrier pigeon messages of how it is and what lies ahead. When we decide to read a sutra, we are led forward to new vistas meant for us. But was there a moment before we decided that there was something that called us to that sutra that we did not know until we showed up for it? When we meditate on a word or phrase or flower, we also have a chance to explore and examine these notions that Buddha talked about to Kāśyapa. When this is, that is. When this is gone, that is gone. One of the observations we can make around here, it's not the season yet, but it's coming up when the turkey chicks are born and the mother hens are parading around through the woods. One in the lead and two in the rear is typically what's found. The mother hens in the front is looking up and around, making sure where they're going is okay and all the chicks are in line and following, and there are two hens in the rear checking the rear guard. They're exhibiting several factors of awakening, actually. There's an awareness, a mindfulness of their surroundings. There's a discernment of what's ahead or what's behind or what's below. There's a persistence because they stay with it. And there's concentration. Those are four of the seven factors of awakening that turkeys have. We talk about our practice began with the Buddha. Actually began with the mother of all the Buddhas, Mahaprajnaparamita. We chanted that this morning. And there are some some descriptors for Mother Prajnaparamita. Unfindable, unthinkable, indescribable, indecipherable, indefinable, ungraspable, unformulatable, inconceivable, incomparable, unlocatable, unisolatable, unapproachable, uncalibratable, unframable, uncorrelatable, insubstantial, non-self-existing, foundationless, traceless, nameless, pathless, goalless, abodeless, stainless, measureless.
Listless. Listless.
In Lex Hickson's book on the mother of the Buddhas, he writes, there's a moral strand to the Prajnaparamita Sutra, and it is very emphatic. The authentic practice of Mahayana is this: never abandon living beings crossing over entirely into the expanse of the absolute by rejecting or negating relativity. The bodhisattvas do not become liberated from life, nor do they pursue any form of separate self-realization. They direct an ecstatic flood of love and friendliness toward all, connecting their mind streams as intimately with all beings as with their most cherished family members and beloved friends. This astonishing spiritual feat frees the bodhisattvas from every impure intention of harming, denigrating, abandoning, or even merely ignoring others. The authentic practice of Mahayana bodhisattvas. So back to the turkeys. There was a sesshin here where in the evening on a full moon, at about dusk, the turkeys came down the slope and gathered in the flat of the stream down below us here. And One turkey, over a period of about 15 minutes, gave out a brief four or six syllable riff. And the rest of the 20 turkeys responded the same riff. And then the solo turkey gave another riff. And the other turkeys responded again. There were some of the older turkeys that were mumbling these riffs. But it seemed like a ritual that they were engaged in. Now, turkeys are not the only birds that engage in social communication like this, but turkeys are related to Archaeopteryx. That was like 160 million years ago. So you wonder about our practice. We talk about it starting with the Buddha, but you wonder about Mahaprajna Paramita and all these other critters that surround us, that are part of us, that are even disappearing from this world we're in. The call and response that the turkeys were doing is something that is found in sub-Saharan African cultures, but it's also found in Judaism, Christianity, and Buddhism. Actually, most religions probably have that call response. So it's humbling to consider that Buddhism and other ways of that we practice, that some refer to as New Age, that we discovered in the 50s or 60s or 70s, are just really some old, old practices. And we've refined them in ways for us. But back to this present moment, and all that there is in this present moment. And all the past, all the future, all is now, and it includes the store consciousness. So to wrap this up, if our mind function that we become aware of precedes our awareness of it, I want to conjecture this, that we follow the way, we follow the path when we are attuned to the way as it unfolds before us. We are watching the ripening, the continuous ripening of conditions, even the social and cultural ripening of conditions. And where we put our attention is most important. That our attention is put right before us allows the possibilities, the fuzzy possibilities, the superposition of possibilities to unfold one way or another, and not both ways, if it's two. Where we put our attention allows for some tuning of how this unfolding resolves. So that's all I have for today. Thank you for listening. And I'd like to hear what you're thinking, what comes up.
Hi, Doug. It's Covey.
Yes, Covey.
Let's say two quick things, please. Well, three things. One, what a wonderful Dharma talk. So much in it, you know. But you mentioned Lex, the great, late great Lex Hixson. Yeah, he lived not too far from where I'm at right now in New York or in Yonkers. He helped Tetsugen, Bernie Glassman, come back to New York and start the Greystone Foundation that helped a lot of disadvantaged. Black families, single mothers. He was also a Sufi master, a Sufi sheikh, and a Zen master that was transmitted by Bernie Glassman. He also wrote the record of transmission of light. He translated also, besides Francis Cook. And I think he also wrote Living Buddha, Living Christ. And he also gave a wonderful Dharma talk. There's not so much of him left, but there's something, I forgot, open space. And there's a teisho from him that he says, it's hard to speak from the open space. But when you listen to that teisho, like you're the hair on the back of your neck, or you know, can rise because he is speaking from that open space. Anyway, Les Hixson, and the other thing is this mother of all Buddhas, Prajaparamita. It's always been kind of, maybe you could actually address this. I would appreciate if you could address this, you know, in the beginning of Heart Sutra, Buddha chose Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, the Bodhisattva of compassion, to express the truth of emptiness. It wasn't Manjushri. And, you know, the two wings of wisdom and compassion. But what's something about you said about this pre kind of like concept decision? I see, like, usually it's said that wisdom leads to compassion. A lot of times, especially in the West, it's like wisdom leads to compassion. Understanding leads to compassion. But I also see that the flip side, these are like correlated, the flip side can also happen, which is more emphasized in like Sufi tradition or the Eastern traditions, which they also follow the call and response, by the way. So anyway, if you could speak to that. And interestingly, Avalokiteshvara was originally supposed to be a man in India. Then he went to China. When it went to China, then it became Kuan Yin, a woman. So this is like I don't know what you would call it, the gender transformation, like, and the connection, the unity of the genders. Mother of the Buddhas could also be the father of the Buddhas. Anyway, that's my thought.
Thank you, Kaveh. Where does wisdom come from, and how does it show up in us? I think we notice it when it does show up, but it's shown up before we notice it. And wisdom is the mother of all the Buddhas, which is everyone here as well. All our wisdom is our mother. Now, last week we had an important ceremony here honoring not just Mahaprajnaparamita, but Kuan Yin and other female bodhisattvas. And I don't know, Carolyn, do you want to say anything about Mahaprajna Paramita or us? Hi.
I like this notion, or resonate with me, that the universe doesn't give rise to consciousness, but consciousness gives rise to the universe. And the implications of that seem to be to affect us individually as well. I tend to think that I'm kind of directing my own practice and my own internal work towards becoming more conscious. And that sounds like perhaps consciousness is what's really doing the directing, through maybe intuition and serendipity or whatever presents itself and guides me toward becoming more conscious. I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, how we, thank you, Chris. How we use our consciousness is really important. It's talked about that it's important to have good friends and to do good deeds, to understand the paramitas in our activity, in our thinking, in our planning, in our doing. And that focused attention helps the consciousness unfold in rich ways. There are groups of people that choose friends who aren't so friendly, and actually the basis of their contact is actually a lot of hatred. And yet they create a reality based out of their group hatred that causes great harm to others, but also to themselves. And actually there's a tremendous amount of conflict that happens within those groups. So where we put our attention, who we hang out with, is very important with what realities unfold. And before those realities can unfold, there's a lot of possibilities. And so we have to be careful. We have to take best care of this body, mind. And then that helps us take care of other body minds. That's what I have there. Thank you, Chris. It is. Yeah. Thank you, Todd. Asking why brings up doubt. But doubt is important because that also leads us through to different threads of connection that we can examine. What's beautiful about Dogen's talk on time being, you know, we talk about space-time, but space is like a thing, and time is like a thing, and yet space is actually in motion too. It is in flow. And so maybe space-time, it's better to say being time. Being requires the multiple dimensions of X, Y, and Z, spatially. Then there are also the dimensions of mind that occur when we dream. even with colors. There is a time element and a beingness in that, and yet it's, and the conjuring up of, like last night I was dreaming of these bugs that were sticky like tar stuck to my shoes that were moving. And it's like, how do I get them off my shoes? So there was actual physicality about them and a time element about them, a reality about them, and a stress. So there's this, how do we take care of this being time and to come and just sit with this being's breath? And to do like the turkeys do, concentrate, persist, pay attention, which is being mindful, discerning my posture. I watch that chin and where's my breath? Is it beginning? Is it ending? You know, all these are factors of awakening that result in the other three, which is joy, and equanimity. There's one other I forget, but it's related to joy. That you can't measure, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you. Hogan. Hi.
Hi. Thanks very much, Doug. And thank you, Chris, for bringing my attention back to a place in the talk where my attention also really was drawn in, which was this idea that we had this idea that the universe begat consciousness. And then Doug said, well, maybe consciousness begat the universe. And as I started to digest that, I felt an opening. I felt something that was quite open. But I think it's that the opening was happening not in going all the way to this begat that, but that a co-arising is really, I think, for me, the thing that really resonates is that this consciousness and awareness completely predates this thing that we identify as life in this universe. That's starting to feel more and more right to me. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, it's how applicable is that? Well, the way it's applicable is back to the co-arising thing, which I think is so crucial to having compassion for whatever I meet during the day and whoever I meet, and reminding myself that what I seem to be saying or what they seem to be saying to me is not one transmitting to the other. It's a co-arising of a connection of something. And that's something I just wanted to offer for consideration.
The universe is also us. I think in the Dual Mirror Samadhi, it says, you are not it. In truth, it is you, speaking of the universe. But maybe using Hogan's point, it's co-arising. You are the universe and the universe is you, and it's simultaneous and arising. And it's also recognition of the impermanent self that is present in this. Community is very important. When we bowed this morning, we took refuge in the three gems, the three jewels, the three treasures, taking refuge in Buddha nature, taking refuge in the Dharma, the teachings, taking refuge in Sangha, the of community. And we are so dependent, interdependent on community. That's why this community is so important. And thank you for all being here, for keeping this going, keeping this community going. It sustains each of us, and it sustains all of us, I think.
Thank you.
a good topic over lunch, yes.
I'm not to save it for that.
All right. Any announcements before we go? We have Neane Sashin that's beginning February 11th to the 18th that Carolyn will lead. Pamela is going to be Shuso. Her Shuso period begins then, a practice period begins. I think there's a Zazen Kai the first Saturday of February. And thank you all for your support, your moral support, your presence, your financial support. It's what's sustaining us. Come visit. It's green, it's lush up here right now. So please join us sometime.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.